You're listening to Reading Glasses, a show about book culture and literary life designed to help you read better. I'm author and book devourer Mallory O'Mara.
And I'm Bria Grant, filmmaker and e-reader. This episode, hey, happy Halloween week, Mallory. It's Halloween week. And we're talking about a new genre, a genre we have taken notice of. And it is called Sporer. That's mushroom-themed horror, folks. Get excited.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about that, and we're interviewing pal of the show, past guest of the show, Clay McLeod Chapman.
But first, what are you reading, Bria?
I just started a book that I feel like the Glassers are going to enjoy. It is called Small Town Big Magic. Thought it was a good Halloween-y sort of read.
I almost bought this book recently just because of the title.
It's a fun, witchy rom-com. Basically, it's about a woman. She lives in a small town. And she owns a bookstore and she lives in the Midwest, and she's just really, her goal is just to make the town as great as possible. She works for the city council. And what she finds out is, hold on, let me see if this is given away. Yes, this is all given away already, is that strange things basically start happening and paranormal things start happening. And it turns out witches are real, and she is a descendant of one, and she could possibly be one. And she finds out that her powers basically start to come back, even though this whole town is, I'm not giving anything away, this is all on the Goodreads page. The whole town is full of witches. Everyone in that town is a witch. And at age 18, if you have dim magic, you are not great at magic, you can choose to leave town or you can choose to stay but have your memory wiped of anything magical. And she had dim magic. She was not great, so she chose to have her memory erased. But now, for some reason, her powers have come back and her friends tell her all about what this town is. This town is like a haven for witches, and she has to figure out why this is happening and what to do, and also she has to keep her powers a secret. So it's good. It's like a fun, witchy book set in a small town with a secret. So it checks a lot of boxes, I think, for me and for the Glassers.
Yeah,
and there's a romance element
good.
To it as well. What are you reading, Mellie?
I'm reading a buzzy horror book that I was supposed to save for the readathon, which as we are recording this before the readathon, and I couldn't wait because it looks so good. It's Jackal by Aaron E. Adams.
I saw that on your stack.
Oh my God, it is so good. I think you'd really like this. So it's about this woman, and she has moved from her very small town in Pennsylvania to the big city. She's been gone for a long time, and she's super successful at her job, but her engagement has just ended. So she's coming back for her best friend's wedding. And even though she has like a super high powered job, she kind of feels like she's coming back as a failure. And everyone's kind of like, oh, I thought you were supposed to come back with your fiance. And she's like, no, we broke up. And, She never comes back to the small town because when she was a teenager, she was very close to an abduction that happened. This young girl that she knew was taken in the woods, and it's kind of messed her up for a really long time, and she never really wanted to come back, and she's very creeped out about the woods there. And that night, this is not a spoiler, this is like first line of the jacket copy. At that night, at the wedding that's in the middle of the woods at this like cool barn, her best friend's daughter gets taken and no one knows where she went. No one knows what happened. And she starts to connect the dots and realizing this is a pattern that happens where it's always a young black girl. It's always at a party. It's always near the woods. These girls have been being taken for years. So she needs to solve what is going on and find her goddaughter before something really bad happens. And it like kicks off with a bang. The writing is really good. I am loving it so far. It's very spooky. So that's Jackal by Aaron E. Adams.
And mine is Small Town Big Magic by Hazel Beck.
So we want to take a moment to share some listener feedback. A few episodes ago, we read some listener feedback from someone who saw a cool Sporer display at Powell's. So this feedback is from the bookseller that made that display.
Wow, they were listening?
This is one of my favorite pieces of feedback we've ever gotten. It is so cool.
Oh.
So this feedback is, Dear Mallory and Bria, I'm Kirsten. I work at Powell's on Hawthorne in the genre/kids room. Someone came in today and asked about the mycological horror display. I did that display last month for my first ever curated display. It had tons of books on it that I was introduced because of your podcast.
Aww. Wow.
So
what
cool.
What a circle.
When I was in college,
really have gotten into like a Reading Glasses, like, there's some sort of like circle, loop. Closing a circle here.
So Kirsten says, when I was in college, I fell in love with reading for the first time after listening to Reading Glasses. I'm behind lately, but I've been listening for years, and I even drove up to Seattle to see Mallory speak when she did her book tour for Lady from the Black Lagoon. I did a spooky teen graphic novel display this month and had previously requested copies of Mary to be brought in. So those are on display now, and I've been excited to recommend it for the Halloween season. This is all to say that I'm a fan and a glasser, and I owe y'all so much for bringing me into the reading world after so much time being too intimidated to join in. Someone came in, and she asked me where the mycological horror display was, which isn't up right now since it was for last month. I asked how she even knew about it, and she said Reading Glasses had someone write in, and it was mentioned on the show, that I melted into the floor and passed away, because that's a dream come true, and I had no idea anyone even knew about it. It sold a few books, and I was really proud of it already, but hearing that made me feel super happy and excited. Oh my God. Bria, you want to read the rest of this?
Sure. It continues. I've almost lapsed a full year working as a bookseller, and it's a job that makes me endlessly happy. But I would not have found it if it had not been for your podcast. I'm an illustrator on top of working full-time as a bookseller. I'm hoping to eventually go part-time and work in publishing and illustrating book covers for YA and horror. I want to work for Laura Panapinto one day. That's so nice. The TLDR of all of it.
And Kirsten, I did send this email to Lauren.
Oh, that's great. The TLDR of all of it is that I love you guys, and being introduced to Reading Glasses drastically changed my life's direction. Hearing some silly display I did made it back to you guys really means the world to me. I'm embarrassingly emotional writing this. It's so small, but this, to me, is the coolest thing ever. We also think it's the coolest thing ever. What a fun...
Oh, my God. I'm getting embarrassingly emotional reading this.
Yes, me too.
Like, this is the whole reason we do the show. And hearing that it makes such a difference to people, like, really gets to me. This is like, one of my favorite pieces of fan mail we've ever gotten.
Yeah. If you guys want the list for the mycological horror display, I can give you a rundown of what we chose and why. I also run a really dorky little Instagram where I post all the shelf talkers summaries and art I do for incoming books, mostly horror, at the store, and we'll link to that in the show notes. It's Kirsten's Book Nook. You can also go to Kirsten_Valerie_illustration. Wow.
That's... Yeah, we'll put a link to the show notes in that.
So
and
cute.
Kirsten, yes, we do want the list of what you chose and why. And wow, this seriously made my entire day when we got
also,
this.
Also, I love
this
the
email.
Glasser that went in and asked about the display. Like, what a fun follow-up.
Oh my God. This is just like, this is five layers of amazing. And also, Kirsten, you got to write in with your wheelhouse at some point. We got to know what the wheelhouse is here.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yes. Please follow up. Send us a follow up.
So you can email us at readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. If you want a list of all the books we talk about on the show delivered to your inbox every month, you can sign up for our newsletter. There's a link in the show notes. Just want to do a quick shout out to all the folks who have stepped up and signed up to support us on MaximumFun.org to keep the newsletter free, because it still is free and you sign up in the show notes. We do a new expanded newsletter now every month with all the books we talk about on the show every month, plus extra recommendations from Bria and I, and then like fun seasonal stuff that we're talking about. And yeah, we just got an email from Maximum Fun this morning saying that even more people have signed up to support us. It really means a lot. And because of that, we're able to keep doing the newsletter, and we really appreciate it. There's also a bookmark about Bria's new movie.
Oh, yeah. My new movie, Torn Hearts, is available for free on Amazon. So if you have Amazon Prime, which a lot of us do, and you want to watch a spooky movie, it's not spooky. It's a thriller. It's more of a thriller, but it stars Katie.
It's still a good Halloween movie, though.
Yeah, it stars Katie Sagal as a country singer, and things go wild when two other young country singers come to her house to try to get her to do a song with them. And yeah, it's for free on Amazon Prime. And thank you for everyone who watched it, because it was on the top 10 watched things this past week on Amazon. Like, overall, it was like number 4 watched movies. So that was amazing. And those kind of numbers obviously really helped me. So yeah, add it to your queue. Let it play in the background. It's free now. You don't even have to pay for it. But that kind of stuff means a lot to my career.
But you should watch it, because it's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Oh,
it's brilliant. It's so good. Great Halloween movie. So before we talk about Spore, we're going to take a quick break. Reading Glasses is sponsored in part this week by Soylent. Soylent, which is the original food tech company and makes delicious and nutritious nutrition products in convenient formats. You have the complete protein drink. You have the complete energy drink. You have the complete meal drink, which I have a ton of in my cabinet right now in the vanilla flavor. It is my favorite. They are all convenient and ready to drink shakes. The complete meal I love because it provides 20 grams of plant-based protein, 39 essential nutrients, healthy fats, 400 calories of slow-burning carbs, and it's tasty. It tastes like a milkshake. It's delicious.
You know what I dislike is doing dishes, is making a big, huge meal, takes so much time, and then I have to do dishes. Guess what? With Soylent, it's an easy meal. You do not have to do dishes. If you are on the run, you can drink this thing in your car. You don't have to sit down. There's no cleanup. There's no cooking. There is no mess. And I appreciate that very much about Soylent. Plus, there's some chocolatey flavors. You're going to love this creamy chocolatey goodness, which is, you know, obviously something I enjoy. Maybe you don't know this about me. I'm a chocolate monster. But I love this chocolate flavor. It actually tastes good. Y'all know we love Soylent. We can't say enough good things about them.
Yeah, I have a lot of supplements to take for powerlifting, and I gotta take them in the morning, and my problem is that I don't like eating breakfast. One, I don't want to make a big meal in the morning. Two, I don't want to clean up after a big meal. No one wants to, like, wake up and cook. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you do, but God, you're probably the kind of person who, like, meditates and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, God, I am not that. But the great thing about Soylent is I can drink a complete meal and this, like, delicious shake, and then I have a food in my stomach and breakfast, and then I could take all my supplements so I can be a beefcake. It's perfect. I love it. It is complete balanced nutrition made from U.S. grown sustainable source ingredients, which means it's good for you and good for the planet. And I take it for breakfast, but you can, you know, have it any time a day, whether you need a quick lunch, extra, you know, a pick me up in the afternoon, whatever it is, Soylent's got your back. And you can go to soylent.com/glasses right now and use code glasses to get 20% off your first order. That's quite a lot. That's soylent.com/glasses and code glasses for 20% off your first order. So that's soylent.com/glasses.
Glasses.
Glasses.
I'm Jesse Thorne. On the next Bullseye, our annual Halloween Spectacular. We'll interview Anna Fabrega from Los Espookies, Monet Exchange from Drag Race, and the great R.L. Stine, creator of Goosebumps.
You know, I don't really get too deep into the real fears. It's a lot safer to do a dummy coming to life.
That's on the next Bullseye for MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This week, happy Halloween! It is our favorite holiday and my personal favorite time of year to read. So we've done Halloween specials about witches. We've done them about werewolves, even one about spooky books that aren't too scary. And this Halloween, we're talking about horror's hottest trend, mushrooms, also known as Spore. Bria, what is Spore?
It's a new genre. It's a subgenre of horror. I won't say it's new. We've seen Spore in the past. I think it just now suddenly has a name. But it has been growing. That's Mallory's joke. It's been growing, pun intended. No pun intended. Over the past decade, and there's been a lot more of it in the past year or two.
Yes.
And we definitely noticed it, and other people have noticed it as well. But it's basically a subgenre of horror that involves mushrooms, fungus, in all sorts of ways, in body horror, in locations. You could just be inside a giant mushroom. That would be Spore too. So anything mushroom or fungi related.
Yeah, and it's often mixed with, like, zombies, like Girl with All the Gifts, or ghosts, like our wonderful guest today's book. So you can make Spore with whatever. It's like the genes of horror.
Yes,
you can
very
mix
much.
It with whatever you want.
Yes.
But Bria, when did we start noticing this was becoming a trend?
Well, I tried to do some research on this, but I remember people responding very positively to Mexican Gothic, obviously. And that was a couple years ago, and it had a Spore element. And I think that was one that really kicked off things. But I didn't hear the term until this year, until much recently. I think you told me. You were like, do you know what people are calling mushroom horror?
A Glasser wrote in.
Oh, nice.
A Glasser wrote in and was like, I love mushroom horror. It's Spore. And we were like, oh my God.
That's very yes. cute. Very cute. Interestingly, Spore is also used for sports horror. So that is another way you
Ooh,
can
combine
use
the two.
Spore. Oh my God. But I was thinking, like, Weep Ride Upon Sticks, like, is a good sports horror a book. So that could, that's a different kind of spore. But today we're talking about the mushroom kind, which I also find that it coincides with a lot of gothic fiction, it seems. Because it's like big spooky house. It's damp. It's dark. So it seems like it's kind of going in that direction. But we've seen it in sci-fi horror. We've seen it in all sorts of places.
Mm-hmm. I do love a damp horror book.
Yes, yes.
They're in a spooky, damp place. Sign me up. So why do we think people are getting into it? We've definitely seen it ramp up in the past year or so, get a lot of fan mail about it. What is appealing about Spore?
I mean, I think mushrooms are gross, personally. Like, I mean, not like, like, I like them if they're cooked, but I don't like a lot. Like, you know when someone was like, I want a mushroom-filled pizza? Like, ooh, too many mushrooms grosses me out.
No, I feel the same way about mushrooms that I feel about tomatoes, as I like mushroom, like, I like a mushroom gravy, but I don't want to eat a mushroom.
Oh, you know I want to eat a mushroom.
Like, I like salsa, but I don't want to eat a tomato.
I like both of those things. I like them both. I just don't like too many mushrooms. That's, like, in large quantities, they start to freak me out. And I read one theory.
I feel like that's the whole underlying theme of the Spore genre, though, is too many mushrooms.
I did read one theory that mushrooms, they kind of freak humans out because they just pop up out of nowhere. So, like, no sign, nothing there, and then suddenly it rains and, like, hey, there's a mushroom, which is kind of weird to us. Like, normally when things grow, it takes, like, a long time. Also, they do grow in these dark, damp places, like damp places. So it's something that horror fans like, because, like Mallory, a lot of people
love the damp.
Mallory loves to sit down, put on a humidifier, just keep it real damp in that room. But I think it's just, wow, she just held up her humidifier. She has a little mini humidifier. Loves a damp, damp room, which doesn't go well with books, Mallory. I don't know
it's good
how
for your skin.
It is good for your skin. But I personally think it's a fun new way into horror that can be gross and weird, and it kind of disturbs us a little bit on some weird level that we don't totally understand. What about you? Why do you think people are getting into Spore?
I think the newness is it. It's horror is a genre with a lot of established tropes and subgenres, so I think that anything new and fresh is going to attract readers. You know, incorporating a mushroom element makes a subgenre, even one that is like very established, feel like something you haven't seen before. You know, Mexican Gothic is a great example of this, because it's like a very classic Gothic haunted house story. But the mushroom element, along with some other elements of the book, makes it feel so exciting and new, and makes it hard. Like, there's so many tropes, you know, ghosts, haunted houses, whatever it is, that you can start to kind of guess what's going to happen. But I feel like with Mexican Gothic, the mushroom element was such a huge surprise that you really didn't know what was going to happen. And for like hardcore readers of the genre, I think that's really appealing, myself included.
Yeah.
So speaking of ourselves, Bria, are you into Spore?
I like it.
Not into Spore?
I feel the opposite way about it that I feel about mushrooms on a pizza. Like, I can take a lot of Spore, less mushrooms on my pizza. Here's the thing. People are going to be mad about this. I'm not disparaging a mushroom pizza. Like, I like the proper pizza combination for me is mushrooms, olives, and bell peppers. That's like my favorite combo. So I do like mushrooms. I just don't like
too many. I think the last pizza we had together had mushrooms on it.
Yeah, I always put mushrooms on a pizza, but I don't want too many. And I don't want those kind that look like little worms. You know those kind? Sometimes they put
the long ones.
Don't put a long mushroom on my pizza. It weirds me out. Those can be like in stir fries, but when you put them on a pizza, I start to wonder, is this some sort of spell you're trying to put on me? I don't know what's happening here.
Creepy.
So I think, yes, I like them, and I like them in large quantities, unlike a pizza. I like it. I'm into it. I find it creepy and gross. I don't like too much gross stuff in horror, but I like a certain amount, and this is a good gross place to dive into for me. What about you? You like it too.
I'm into it. I think it's wicked cool to see a new wave of something in horror. I don't know if I'd add it to my wheelhouse per se, but I think I can say it would pique my interest if I saw a book in a bookstore that mentioned mushrooms in the jacket copy.
Yeah.
I personally think fungus is very terrifying. Yeah. It's not a plant, but it's also not an animal. It's its own thing. It doesn't need sunlight. Yeah. It can communicate with other funguses. Ugh. It can take over your body. Yeah. There's just a lot of like inherently creepy things about mushrooms. In fact, because of that, I think we're going to see a lot more body horror that involves mushrooms. But I am pro Spore, and I'm happy to see more authors delve into that world. Mm-hmm. Are you got any Spore recommendations for our Halloween listeners?
Yeah, I mean, a book that I feel like a lot of people really liked this year was What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher. Great Spore. It's a retelling of the Fall of the House of Usher, which apparently has a fungal theme. Did you know that? I haven't read that book. Or maybe...
I have a while ago, and I think... Yeah, I think it was mentioned that there were weird mushrooms, but I don't think Poe goes into it like Kingfisher does.
Got it. Yeah. And then I also wanted to shout out what you said earlier. Like, there are Spore books that aren't just like... There's a lot of haunted house ones, I think, but The Girl with All the Gifts by Emma Carey, I love that book. It's a great fungal horror with zombies, but the fungus isn't what you think it is, and that I really like. And he uses like fungi. What's the difference? Fungi is like multiple fungus. Or is it multiple kinds? Is it one of those kind of plurals? Oh, no. Anyway, the fungus in the book is not what you think it's going to be. There's like a surprise. And I feel like that book, it was kind of a hit a couple of years ago. And I'm always trying to shout it out because I just think it was like a really creative zombie book.
Yeah, and there was that because the movie of it came out a few years ago, right?
Yeah, I thought the movie was pretty good.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, it's worth watching. And then obviously we have Clay on, and his book is Spore. And it's a little bit of a surprise Spore. I hope that's not a... That's not a...
No, it's a surprise what the mushrooms do.
Yes.
It's not a huge shock as to the fact that there are mushrooms there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is... I will co-sign that. I would have talked about it more if we didn't have Clay coming up next.
Yeah.
But I got to read an early copy of this, and I love all of Clay's books, but this one, it's such a unique take on the haunted ghosty genre. Mm-hmm. It's such a smart book, and it's truly scary, and it's just so brilliant. I love it. So if you are looking for a good Spore, Ghost Eaters by Clay McLeod Chapman is a great one. It also... wouldn't be a Halloween episode if I didn't find a way to recommend something by Caitlin Kiernan.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Oh, God. I am such a Caitlin Kiernan devotee. Mm-hmm. The first book in their Tinfoil Dossier series, mm-hmm. it's a novella trilogy from Tor.com. And it was a really creepy mushroom element where there's this cult that injects themselves with this fungus.
Ugh, gross.
And... it is, cults are already, we all, if you've listened to the show for a long time, you know that I'm very creeped out by cults because I don't like group activities. But they they inject themselves with the fungus, and clearly nothing good is going to happen when they do that. And it's like super creepy, and it's so great.
Honestly,
and it's like,
mushrooms are around, nothing good happens. I'm sure there's some examples, some positive mushroom books. There's some mushroom enthusiasts out there that are like, they help the world. And I'm sure they do. And they are great. I'm sure they are wonderful, but in books, most of the time, they are a signal that things are going poorly.
Yeah, there's a really great book, a nonfiction book called The Entangled Life by Merlin Drake, which is what other person would write a book about mushrooms than somebody named Merlin Drake? but it's like a really great nonfiction book about mushrooms. That's fantastic. But yeah, if you're reading a book and some mushroom stuff comes up, unless it's a book about a pizza place, you are probably in for something creepy. Also, a book we used to talk about all the time and haven't recently is The Beauty by Aaliyah Whiteley. It's about a world where all the women have died and mushrooms start growing on the graves of the women who've died, and the mushrooms start turning into something sentient. And it is super weird, but it is super awesome. Both these books that I'm recommending, oh my God, I didn't even put the name. It's Agents of Dreamland is the Caitlin Kiernan, the first one in the Caitlin Kiernan series. And The Beauty are both very short. So if you're looking for like a quick, fun Halloween Spore read, these are both really great. So if you have Spore thoughts.
Yeah, or just walk over to the damp corner of your house and reach your hand in, and you're going to find a nice
little
horror book based on mushrooms.
I remember seeing a post on social media that Merlin Drake, who wrote The Entangled Life, he actually planted or like grew mushrooms out of his author copy of the book.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, you know those like something ear mushrooms that people like grow, get kits in, and they grow it to like eat them
at
home?
Did you say ear mushrooms?
He did that
wood ear mushrooms. You know, when you say just ear mushrooms, some reason that is really gross, but just wood ear mushrooms,
but
that's fine.
Wood ear is fine?
Yeah, wood ear is like a kind of mushroom that I can recognize, but something about a,
You're thinking of mushrooms growing out of
people's
ears. I did,
and it grossed me out immediately.
Yuck. But we would love to hear you, listener, your spora recommendations. You can send them to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. And before we have a wonderful interview about spora with one of our favorite spooky author friends, Clay McLeod Chapman, we're going to take a quick break. Reading Glasses is sponsored in part this week by Ritual. Gaps in the diet should not be ignored. Over 90% of women aged 19 to 50 are not getting enough vitamin D from their diet, and 95% are not getting their recommended daily intake of key omega-3s, especially now in this world where most of us spend all our time inside. Vitamin D can be scarce, but you know who can help you out? Ritual.
Definitely. So Ritual's essential for women 18 plus multivitamin. You heard that right. Essential for women 18 plus multivitamin. It was formulated by exhaustive research to help fill nutrient gaps in the diets of women ages 18 plus. That's a lot of us. We're 18 plus. It is formulated with nutrients to help support brain health, bone health, blood health, and provide antioxidant support.
And if you're looking to support other aspects of your body, Ritual just released Symbiotic Plus. It is a gut health supplement with clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and a postbiotic. The whole biotic spectrum is covered here, folks. All in one minty capsule. Ritual is committed to third-party testing from USP and the Non-GMO Project, traceable and vegan-friendly ingredients, which is very exciting, and always clear communication, no shady stuff. Only support for your body. So if you want to try out these wonderful multivitamins or Symbiotic Plus, you can go right now to ritual.com/glasses because Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off your first 3 months. So go to ritual.com/glasses and turn healthy habits into a ritual. That's 10% off at ritual.com/glasses. So that's ritual.com/glasses.
Glasses.
Glasses.
Hi, I'm Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have a special announcement. I'm no longer embarrassed by my brother, and me. You know, for years, each new episode of this supposed advice show was a fresh insult, a depraved jumble of erection jokes, ghost humor, and frankly, this is for the best, very little actionable advice. But now, as they enter their twilight years, I'm as surprised as anyone to admit that it's gotten kind of good. Justin, Travis, and Griffin's witticisms are more refined, like a humor column in a fancy magazine. And they hardly ever say bazinga anymore. So, after you've completely finished listening to every single one of all of our other shows, why not join the McElroy Brothers every week for My Brother, and Me.
So here we are with one of our favorite spooky reading glasses authors, Clay McLeod Chapman. Clay, what are you reading for this spooky season?
Oh my God, you totally did this to me. You made me read The Nest.
I did make you read The Nest.
And I don't know if I can forgive you. That book was scary. That book is written, there's no way that book is written for younger readers. That's like, that is some like intense stuff right there.
Yeah, that's sort of the thing. it's ostensibly middle grade, but it is one of the scariest books I've ever read. Tell us about it. What did you like it?
I mean, I loved it. I mean, it's kind of embedded in the head now. Where, what is The Nest about? It's by Kenneth Opel and Opel. I hope I'm saying that name right.
That's what I say.
Yeah. Little young boy, middle school age boy has a younger sibling in the house now, and you know, parents are fretting over this new child. It's kind of unclear. There's like a vague kind of concern and a lot of trips to the hospital, and you know, they're very worried that baby Dose is not doing very well. And it just so happens to be dovetailing at the same time with a, I guess you could say like a paper wasp nest being kind of assembled outside this young boy's bedroom window. And, you know, I don't know if I, how much further I want to go other than that these two kind of events, tether themselves together in,
oh, and it's so creepy,
the most nightmarish ways humanly possible. I mean, oh my God. It really makes me not want to look at paper wasp nests.
And it's such a deceiving book because you look at it and the print is so big and you're like, oh, this is a kid's book. And then you are being ushered into a nightmare realm.
I mean, you could easily read it as an adult and it could fuck you up.
Yes.
You can, if you read it, the target audience, oh my God, like how does this book not traumatize children? How come they're not like campaigns to have this book burned? I mean, it's like, it is one of those kind of profound books that like, I never, is this a recent book? This book is recent, right? It has to be.
Yeah, and the way I look at it is I think that for kids, and you know, you have written lots of horror for kids, things are already so hyperbolic for children that, you know, when you're a kid, everything's going to kill you. Everything is the stakes feel so much higher. So for kids reading this, they always kind of live in that world of things being so intense. And, you know, one of the things I love about it is it's such a great sort of, you know, exploration of being an anxious child and not being told things when you're a kid because the parents are trying to protect you. So I can actually see where it would hit harder as an adult, if that makes sense, even though it seems strange.
Yeah. I mean, and as the father of two boys, like, I just can't help but, there's this just this strange intensity of the older boy and how like, you know, his anxiety and he's kind of dealing with his, you know, his own kind of anxiousness, and like it just, you know, your heart breaks, but at the same time, like it is terrifying.
Well, I am so glad that I got to give you such a spooky experience for Halloween.
I will bill you my therapy from here on out, because good God.
Listeners, I literally mailed this book to Clay and said with a card that said, Happy Halloween.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. You're never going to get sleep again.
Because I'm a sick freak. Well, but speaking of scary books that we love, can you tell us about your new book, Ghost Eaters?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the kind of short and sweet of it is that it's about a haunted drug. Imagine that you could pop a pill and see the dead, like see ghosts. And it just so happens that, you know, the more, you know, now that we can see these spirits, they're aware of being seen, and they either might not want to be seen or really, really need to be seen. And you know, the kind of side effects are pretty intense. And yeah, I mean, I feel like the cheese ball elevator pitch is that it's Train Spotting meets Poltergeist. But
I mean, that's as far as elevator pitches go, that's a great one.
I mean, like I wanted to write about addiction. I wanted to write about grief and, you know, just kind of asking that question of like, what is it like to be haunted? I wanted the idea of like a seance in a pill, like something that, you know, like, I mean, I love House of Leaves. I love, you know, haunted house books or films or stories that basically, you know, they might not necessarily reinvent the horror, like the kind of trope of haunted houses, but they allow you to see it in a different way, or just kind of like the architecture kind of changes.
I think you annihilated that in this book.
We're haunted. We are the haunted houses.
Oh, it's so brilliant. It is one of the most brilliant horror books I've ever read. And I'm a haunted stuff aficionado. But there's another really important element to this book. And I don't know how much you want to talk about it without spoiling it, but there is a mushroom element to Ghost Eaters. And this is our big Halloween spoiler special. So you want to... talk a little bit about that element without spoiling too much?
Absolutely. I mean, like, I mean, you know, in the writing of Ghost Eaters, like I was really, I mean, I had to figure out like, what is this drug? Like, how do we, like, how, you know, I was creating a new drug and the drug itself is called Ghost. And, you know, there was this idea of like, what if they snort the ashes of cremated bodies? Or what if they like, you know, like what, like, it was like trying to think of like the kind of cool correlative of a narcotic that has a certain kind of like, like phantasmic element to it. And then, you know, as soon as like, I don't know what it was, and it was just mushrooms. I mean, mushrooms just like popped into my head. And, you know, of course, I don't know about you, but maybe there's that, you know, let's just say hypothetically that, you know, there were those bad mushroom trips that we took just, in our kind of collegiate years.
Just hypothetically.
Hypothetically, totally hypothetically. Like shrooming is one of those, you know, it's not LSD, but it is, yeah, like it is what it is. It's its own ride, its own trip.
It sure is.
I mean, what's in kind of speaking of Spore, I mean, it is, there is nothing, maybe aside from paper wasps, but like nothing that I find more terrifying than the kind of the internal invasion of fungus, of mushrooms.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about next, is what is scary about mushrooms and fungus to you?
Oh my God. It's really the notion that you, by the time you realize that your body is in essence being converted by mushrooms.
Oh my God.
It's too late. Like it's like almost like John Carpenter's The Thing, where it's like, like mushrooms and spores and fungus, like it invades you. It like permeates you. And it's either that you have, you know, inhaled a spore, or you've been exposed to something, some element that is either infinitesimal or invisible. Like it's just, you're just not aware of it. And yet suddenly you begin to change from the inside out. And you know, like in nature, mushrooms basically are, they're like terraformers. They can kind of convert, you know, elements of the earth, the soil, body, like, you know, like it basically makes something out of something else. When you apply that to horror, to the genre, it is, you know, it's absolutely terrifying, horrifying. But it's, and I think what gives it its real true power is the fact that it's not necessarily untrue. Like it hews so close to like what is of the natural world, of the real world, that it feels almost kind of like extra scary because it's real-ish.
Yes, real-ish. Absolutely. I mean, that's how I felt about Ghost Eaters.
I don't know, like when I read Mexican Gothic, when I read What Moves the Dead, or I mean even like, God, what was it? The Girl with All the Gifts, like, mm-hmm. You know, we're in this world where these things, like, you know, mushroom zombies, that's not real, come on. But it's like, well, you know, then you can like do a little Googling around and you're like, oh my God, like the cordyceps fungus, or the, like these are things that have a root in nature. And that's,
yeah, it's very scary.
Yeah.
Totally so, scary. But Ghost Eaters also deals a lot with grief, which for some reason I love books that deal with grief. I do not know why, but so for you as the writer, how are mushrooms and grief related?
It's such a strange question if you haven't read the book, but I do think that like they kind of go hand in hand in my mind, because mushrooms are like the goth, like they're like totally goth. Like they're just like
they really are though.
They totally are like the goth element of nature. It's like, hey mushroom, what's up? Like the world is black. Like it's like there's just something so
just eating death, no big deal.
I do think that, you know, when I think of mushrooms, they are kind of in the shade, or they're oh my God, I was going to say nocturnal. Is nocturnal, like they're night elements, nightshades. That's what I was trying to go for. There is something of them that feels closer to the shadows, or, and in my mind, I'm going to say closer to death than they are to the light of life.
Well, they're one of the only creatures that can survive without sunlight, right?
Yeah, totally.
Very goth.
And they, totally goth, total goth, you know. And, you know, there are in effect various strains of mushrooms that do kind of grow from nothing but, you know, dead things, dead bodies. And like, even like, I mean, like tree, like they rise up from like decaying plant matter. So I don't know, like there's something about that like, that they are so intrinsically connected, tethered to death in their own kind of genesis, in their own kind of life cycle, that to tether it to grief, it doesn't feel like such a far cry to me, because grief to me is the kind of like, how do you exist after the death of someone close to you? Like, how do you move on? How do you exist? It's not even moving on. It's just, how do you continue? And grief is the kind of like the one of the motions, one of the actions that is born out of death. So if I was to kind of, you know, in my mind's eye, like imagine what does grief look like, it would probably be a little goth mushroom, kind of like growing out of your heart.
Now, as cute as that sounds, this book is very scary. And so if this book, something that we have been asking our spooky writers, because this is how we talk about them on the show, if Ghost Eaters was a dish at an Indian restaurant, how many red chili peppers would be next to it, scary wise?
Oh man. I mean, it's so, oh, God, of all the questions, this is the one that freaks me out the most, because I don't want to get the range wrong. Are we talking like 1 through 10 spicy?
Like 1 through 4 or 5.
Okay. I mean, I might be conservative and say 3, but I would really hope for 4.
I mean, as a person who read it and loved it, I would say that it sits there.
Yeah, but it's funny because I'm totally mealy mouthing this, but like when you're having a dish, an Indian dish, there's some sort of like seed that they use for flavoring, mm-hmm. but you never are supposed to eat the seed. It's not like a peppercorn, but it's like I'm totally losing my bona fides here, but like there's some kind of ingredient that like they put it into the food while you're cooking it, but they leave it in there, and it's like a pod or like a when you're having like cider and like they have the like the apples or the like the thing, the oranges, and they put the like the
cloves
cloves, that's it.
Yes. I got you.
So they put the cloves in the Indian food and it gives it its seasoning and its flavor. And then you end up accidentally eating one because they leave it in the food for some damn reason. That is like, rather than being on the spice meter, I think it's the kind of like you take a bite of the food and like in the bite, there is the thing you are not supposed to eat that like totally like ruins the mouthful. That's what Ghost Eaters do.
Flawless pitch.
It is the clove of the Indian meal.
I love it, and I love this book. So before you go, I you know what, I love this, and I will happily recommend listeners have this experience of finding a clove in their mouthful of Indian food. So before you go, what is your spooky edition, spooky things, what is your reader wheelhouse? What are the sort of scary, any kind of trope, any kind of subject, something that when you see a scary book that has this, you're like, I want to read that.
Oh my God. Haunted anything. Like, you know, I know we talked about like haunted houses, and I know we talked about Ghost Eaters being about a haunted drug. Like if you can just say two words and it's haunted, whatever, like just Mad Lib anything, it'll be just like throw Haunted in front of it, I am so there. Haunted tennis shoe, Haunted flashlight, Haunted bra. Like, honestly, like, you know, we were having this conversation earlier about, you know, the Haunted Alexa that is Gus Moreno's.
Oh my God, I love that book. You
know, it's amazing, right? Oh. And like, if you had to tell someone about it, it'd be like, oh, it's about a Haunted Alexa. And they'd be like, what? I mean, like, I just love haunted stuff. Like, if you could just take anything and say there's a ghost in there, I'm in. I'm down.
I love it. It's like that joke where you pat the top of your car and you're like, this baby can fit so many ghosts in here.
Just cram them in. It's a clown car. Ghost car.
That's a lot of ghosts. So Clay, you're on tour right now. You're doing all kinds of stuff. Where can listeners buy the book? Where can they find you? Are you doing anything fun for Halloween event-wise?
Oh my God. Event-wise, I'm going everywhere. I'll be, let's see. Next I'll be in Baltimore. Then I'll be in, Houston, Texas. And then I will be in Kentucky. And then I'll come home and I'll trick or treat with my kids. I'm online. You can do the Twittery thing and the Instagrammy thing and the Facebook thing. I'll be on the road, and I'm coming to LA in November.
And I will be there. I'm very excited. Excited to see you. Excited to celebrate this book. Clay, congratulations. And thank you so much for coming on the show. Now let's solve a bookish problem from one of our listeners. Hannah writes in, "Hello, Bria and Mallory. My name is Hannah, and I just found your podcast a couple months ago and have been devouring it ever since. I haven't worked my way all the way back through your catalog yet, so I'm not entirely sure if you've talked about the subject before, but I figured it couldn't hurt to ask. Recently, I read a really buzzy book. One TikTok was really pushing it as a new sapphic horror must-read, and I have to say I hated it. I forced myself all the way through because I really liked the premise, but I didn't enjoy a single page. I thought the writing was bad, the plot didn't make any sense, etc. I'd like to keep tabs on my Goodreads page of my thoughts on books, as I just recently started reading again. But I really don't want to write a negative review, and I really do want to support young LGBTQ+ horror authors. How would you both go about giving your honest thoughts while remaining respectful of an artist's work? I've been able to do it before face-to-face in an educational setting, but as for book reviews, I'm completely new and very torn. Bria, what should Hannah do?"
Well, first, there are places that make this a bit easier. So like Storygraph, less on how you felt and more of a way just like, this is what this book is about. This covers these topics. You can just do a general, like, this is what this book is, which will help get this author's work out there. So Storygraph is a great place for that if you are open to using a new app. You can also, on Goodreads, just mark red. You don't have to give it any sort of stars. But I'm going to say this. If TikTok is really pushing this on you, TikTok showed up to your house and gave you this book and said, you must read it. Don't feel like you have to carry that banner too. You don't have to jump on this bandwagon. Like, if there are obviously people out there loving this book, they're pushing this book on TikTok. Let them do the good work of promoting this cool author. You are not one of the people who like this author. Like, I'm sorry. I know you want to be supportive. You didn't like this book. You do not like this author. Let those people yell it from the mountains, and you focus on the books that you do love and you want the world to see. Because being genuine is way more important than supporting an author just because other people are supporting the author, or just because I get it. You want to support a young LGBTQ+ horror author. That's really cool. There are a lot of them out there. And like, there are ones that you can find that you will like. So unless you are a paid book reviewer and your boss is like, you got to review this book, you don't have to say anything. Like, just go by the Bambi rule. You know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all, and go support an author you do like. Like, classers are so nice, Mallory. They're so nice. They want to be supportive.
They truly are.
And we like that you want to be supportive. That's like so, that's so sweet. But you don't have to support a book you don't like. Like, just in the same way, like, if you went to the store and there were like multiple kinds of cereal, you don't have to buy the cereal you don't like. Just, you don't have to. You can buy the cereal you do like. Mallory, what like, what do you think that Hannah should do? Sweet Hannah, sweet person.
Well, Hannah, first off, I want to say I fucking get it. You know, reviewing a book that you didn't like by an author you want to support is always going to be a pickle. Sure. And first off, I do want to say, Hannah, next time, dump that fucking book.
Yeah, then you won't have to deal with this problem because you won't have to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. You never have to read a buzzy book. That is a big tenet of reading glasses. That's hours of your life you were never getting back. I know that you feel like, especially when you're on TikTok, you're on social media and all, like, there's all these people and all this buzz around a book that's saying, you got to read it, you got to read it, you got to read it. And you feel the pressure. Resist that pressure. You never have to read a buzzy book, even especially if you're not liking it. You say you hated every single page. Oh my God, Hannah, I wish I could like go back in time and find you while you were starting this book and like grab it and replace it with a bar of chocolate instead and like disappear. Please just dump it next time. Try to resist that social media pressure. And anyway, if you want to post, or if you truly want to post a review of this, which both Bree and I are saying you don't need to, and you probably shouldn't. You can just mark it as read.
Yeah, mark it as read.
My go-to way to talk about a book, whether that's online or in person or whatever it is that I didn't like, skip the star rating, of course, just give it no rating and say, not for me, but it's perfect for fans of X, Y, and Z. Hmm. You know, yeah. That's the way that I say it. You know what? And you don't even have to say it wasn't for you if you feel that uncomfortable. But, you know, you can be like, a lot of this stuff wasn't in my wheelhouse, but it's perfect for people looking for a new sapphic horror book. Or, you know, check this out if you're looking for a sapphic horror book. That way you can help the book find someone who might like it while also being honest about how you felt. You don't have to go, you don't have to say that. What did Hannah say? The plot was bad. The writing was bad. You don't have to say any of that if you don't want to.
No.
There's no pressure. I know. I feel like in this age that we live in of social media, there's like so much pressure to like put everything online. You got to put a picture of every sandwich you eat. You got to put all your thoughts about everything.
I got to say this, though. I am interested in what sandwiches y'all are eating. So peep that kind of content coming.
Perfect. Hannah, instead of uploading a long, well-thought-out review of this book, upload a picture of a sandwich and tag Bria in it.
I like that when people read a bad book, and from now on, all the glassers read a bad book and they don't want to talk about it on the internet, I start getting sandwich tags. I'm like, why am I getting tagged on all these sandwiches?
Upload a picture of a sandwich and said, it's the way to go. But yeah, we've talked so much on the show about how, you know, you don't need to review, to say your specific reviews for books. If you like them or if you didn't like them, you just don't need to do it. You can post about them. You can, you know, whatever it is. But a quick, like, here's the wheelhouse items for this book. Check this out if this is what you're looking for, but it wasn't for me, is a really easy way to do this. I mean, I'd love to hear tips from other glassers about how they like to talk about books that they didn't like. But again, I don't use them any, like Goodreads or Storygraph. I don't venture into those spaces because I'm also an author, but it tells me a lot if I'm looking on like my Book Buddy or something and a book has no rating and no review. I'm like, oh, I didn't like that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need to spend, the thing is, the way that I look at it is like, you already spent all these hours of your life on this book that you didn't like. Why spend more time talking about why you like this book? Has already sapped so much of your life.
Yeah.
Like, just don't bother. Don't sink any more time into it. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So Hannah, let us know what you end up doing, and other glassers, let us know what your strategies are for talking about books that you didn't like. And as always, if you want us to solve your reader problem, you can send it to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. We want to thank the wonderful mods who run our Facebook group and Chrissy and Rachel who moderate our Goodreads page. Remember, you can buy reading glasses, totes and shirts and stickers over at our Void merch store. We are going to be retiring some designs soon because we're going to get some new stuff and we're going to make room for new designs, and we're going to be getting rid of a couple of our older designs.
So we are retiring a couple things from our store. We're retiring the merchandise that says, the ones that say Reading and Mallory and Glasses and Bria and Podcast. And we're going to retire the reading cap, which we like a lot, but we have some new ideas and we want to make sure they get some attention. So we're retiring those two. So if you really want either one of those on a mug, on a shirt, on a pillow, I have a really nice little throw pillow with some reading glasses stuff on it. If you want that little reader cat on some sort of, I don't know what else you can get, just a mug to read in the morning. In the morning, you're reading. You got a rug with a cat on it. You got to get that soon. We're going to be retiring those very soon. So it's last call for those so we can add some new cool designs to our store.
So there's a link in the show notes for that. And if you want to support us and do something do it for free. You can rate and review us on the podcast listening app of your choice. It is great for us and helps us reach more readers, listeners, and sponsors, which is very helpful for us. You can email us at readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter @readinggpodcast, on Instagram @readingglassespodcast. Thanks for listening, and thanks for reading.